Morning, everybody.
Morning.
I think this is the first time since I've been here that this side outnumbers this side, so way to bring it home this morning to the folks on this side. If you have a Bible with you, be turning to James chapter 3. We are going to continue our series from James's letter. We're calling this series A Faith That Works because this book, this letter, I've thought of it for most of my life as one of the most practical books, letters in the New Testament. And one of the reasons why it's so practical is because it's all about how we take this faith that we have in Christ and how do we live it out day to day in real world situations. This morning, we're going to try to cover all of chapter 3. And this chapter is largely about the tongue, and I think we could, take that word tongue and insert words in there, because really what James is talking about is how we use our words, and Jeff just led us in the song Angry Words, and I appreciate that, but let's start off by reading a section of this chapter. I'm going to break it into two pieces. And I've given you some blanks to fill out if you would like in the bulletin. But I want to break it into two pieces. So let's start off by just reading the first 12 verses together. James says this, "Not many of you should become teachers, my brothers, for you know that we who teach will be judged with greater strictness. For we all stumble in many ways, and if anyone does not stumble in what he says, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle his whole body. If we put bits into the mouths of horses so that they obey us, we guide their whole bodies as well. Look at the ships also, though they are so large and are driven by strong winds, they are guided by a very small rudder, wherever the will of the pilot directs. So also the tongue is a small member, yet it boasts of great things. How great a forest is set ablaze by such a small fire. And the tongue is a fire, a world of unrighteousness. The tongue is set among our members, staining the whole body, setting on fire the entire course of life, and set on fire by hell. For every kind of beast and birds of reptile and sea creature can be tamed and has been tamed by mankind, but no human being can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil, full of deadly poison. With it we bless our Lord and Father, and with it we curse people who are made in the likeness of God. From the same mouth come blessing and cursing. My brothers, these things ought not to be so. Does a spring pour forth from the same opening both fresh and salt water? Can a fig tree, my brothers, bear olives or a grapevine produce figs? Neither can a salt pond yield fresh water." Now, I was talking with Jeff the other day, and I told Jeff, one thing I don't have as a preacher is I don't have any formal training in how to do this. And you may go, well, duh, of course we know you don't have any formal training. But my approach in how to prepare a sermon is pretty unsophisticated. I have taught many lessons and I've preached sermons from this passage before. But what I did is I sat down this week on Monday morning, and the way I think of it in my head is I just grab hold of the passage and I just wrestle with it, mentally wrestling with it. And just kind of shake it and just see what falls out. What is James trying to get his readers to understand? What is he trying to get to them? And this is what kept jumping in my head this week. My favorite movie of all time is The Empire Strikes Back. And in the climactic scene of the movie, don't worry, those of you that have seen it, I'm not going to spoil it for those of you that haven't. Even though it is, 30, 40 years old, I'm still not going to spoil it. But in the climactic scene of this movie, you've got the villain Darth Vader who's trying to get the hero, Luke Skywalker, to turn from the light side to the dark side. And in this moment, he looks at Luke and he holds up his fist and he says, "You don't know the power of the dark side." That's the phrase that kept jumping in my mind. By the way, there's a fill in the blank that says you don't know the power. The reason why this kept jumping in my mind was because I think that's what James is saying to his readers regarding the tongue, regarding our words. He's saying you don't understand the power that your tongue, that your words have, one, over your own body, your own life, and two, the destruction that can come from your words. You can't possibly comprehend how powerful your words can be. And to emphasize that, that's what these first 12 verses, I believe, are to emphasize how powerful the words are. And the first thing that he says about the power of our words comes in the first two verses. And I have labeled that in my notes, importance of the tongue, as in the weightiness, the seriousness of our words. Okay, those come in the first two verses. He says this, "Not many of you should become teachers, my brothers, for you know that we who teach will be judged with greater strictness." And then in verse 2, he says, "We all stumble in many ways, and if anyone does not stumble in what he says, he is a perfect man, also able to bridle his whole body." Now, I don't know if you've ever thought about that passage being, kind of strange from a guy who's brother of Christ, a leader of the Church of Jerusalem, and he's writing, not many of you should rush into being teachers. You would think that he would be writing the opposite, like, all of you guys go out and teach. But he says, this is something you need to be careful about. You need to be careful about. Well, why? Well, he says, because we all stumble in many ways. So what's he saying? He says, well, if you teach, what do you have to use if you're going to teach? You have to use words, right? A lot of words. And the more words that you use, the more likely you are that you're going to stumble, and the more likely it is that you're going to cause someone else to stumble. And so you need to understand that teaching requires great preparation and great care because you are forced to use your words. Now, I think he starts off that way to establish this is a big deal, okay? This is a significant thing. This is serious. That's how important it is to think about your words. And I'm telling you, don't rush headfirst into being teachers. Churches were being planted. The gospel was a relatively new thing. People were fired up. And I'm sure there were lots of people that were like, hey, let's jump in there and start teaching. And he's going, whoa, you need to think about how significant it is of what you're about to do. And he says, you're going to be judged with a greater strictness because you've got more opportunity to fall into a hole. Because you're talking more. You're presuming to teach others what the gospel is all about. There's more opportunity for you to mess up. I wrote a few passages down in my notes. 1 Timothy chapter 1. David's covering 1 Timothy right now with us on Sunday mornings in class. And David pointed out, which I think is accurate, the very beginning of that, which is really the first letter of Timothy is like an instruction manual for how to operate the church. Because he's left Timothy in Ephesus, and he's like, this is how I want you to run things. And one of the very first things he says in chapter 1, verse 3, beginning of verse 3, says, I urge you when I was going to Macedonia, remain at Ephesus so that you may charge certain persons not to teach any different doctrine, nor to devote themselves to myths and endless genealogies which promote speculations rather than the stewardship from God that is by faith. The aim of our charge is love that issues from a pure heart and a good conscience and a sincere faith. Now listen to this. If you haven't been with me to this point, listen to this part. He says, certain persons, by swerving from these, have wandered into vain discussions, desiring to be teachers of the law without understanding either what they are saying or the things about which they are making confident assertions. He's telling Timothy, charge those who are teaching to teach the right things. That you have to be prepared. James is just hitting on the same thing. He says, don't rush headfirst into being a teacher because that's an awesome responsibility. Why? Because we can do so much damage with our words. That's how important they are. Jesus in Matthew 12 says every person is going to give an account for every careless word that they speak. Later in Matthew 18, Jesus using a small child as an object lesson, says, whoever causes one of these little ones who believes in me to sin, really probably should say to stumble, it would be better for him to have a great millstone fastened around his neck and be drowned in the depth of the sea. And I meant to put a picture up here of what a millstone looks like from the ones I've seen in Israel. But these are massive things, okay? Massive rock things that if you think about being tied around your neck, you're not coming up out of the water. So all that is, it's really important. This idea of what we can and do say with our mouths is super, super serious. Okay? That's the kind of setting the tone for this whole discussion. Okay? So then he follows up from this idea of, you know, it's super serious, it's super important, to giving three illustrations to back that up. Okay? So this comes in verses 3-8. I'm going to reread these. Okay? And by the way, these are illustrations that really pull on verse 2. Verse 2 where he says, we stumble in many ways. If we don't stumble, then we're perfect and we're able to bridle the whole body. But in essence, he's saying that you can't bridle the whole body. And here are the illustrations that kind of demonstrate that. He says, if we put bits into the mouths of horses so that they obey us, we guide their whole bodies as well. Now, when I was reading that, I was thinking, a few years ago, Olivia and I went on a vacation, just the two of us, while the kids were at church camp. And we went horseback riding. Now, I've been horseback riding twice in my life. So that's not something I know a ton about. But this time, when I got on the horse, the first thing that they said to me was, just keep the horse from eating like plants and trees and stuff that are around where we're going to go. And I'm like, okay. And I realized really quick, those horses are strong. I mean, because that my horse that I was on, all it wanted to do was eat everything around me. Okay? And it wasn't until I learned that, hey, with this little thing that it's got in its mouth, I can keep it from doing it. But as long as I was just like, you know, trying to will it to not do it, it's not going to listen. But I can control it with the little bit in its mouth and in the reins. Okay? That's what I was thinking about when I was reading this. And so he says, you know, that's one example. I can control a horse, this mighty animal, with this small bit. He says, look at the ships also. Though they are so large and driven by strong winds, they are guided by a very small rudder wherever the will of the pilot directs. So again, the idea, something very small is able to control something very massive. And he says, so also the tongue is a small member, yet it boasts great many things. How great a forest is set ablaze by such a small fire. When I was reading, kind of rereading that illustration, what I thought about was, especially in view of that there have been, in the last few, couple of weeks, there have been new wildfires in East Tennessee, that I was thinking about the great wildfire from the Smoky Mountains in the Gatlinburg area back in 2016. And I don't know how much you know about how that started, but it started up at the Chimney Top Trail in the Smoky Mountains with some kids playing with matches. And that, coupled with upwards of 87 mile per hour winds, led to, and I wrote this down, 14 people were killed, 191 people were injured, flames destroyed nearly 2,500 homes and left an estimated $2 billion in damages. More than 11,000 acres were burned inside the Great Smoky Mountains National Park. More than 17,000 acres were burned throughout the path of the fire. And if you've been, you know, I went there a couple years later. We went hiking, spent 2 or 3 days hiking in the Smoky Mountains, and it's just everywhere. You know, the evidence of it is everywhere, even in Gatlinburg. I mean, just everywhere you could still see the charred remains of buildings and trees, and all of that came from a match. And so James, again, is using these three illustrations to say, again, you don't understand how powerful the tongue, how powerful your words can be. And from that, from those illustrations, he says, and the tongue is a fire. The tongue is a fire, just like A small spark can set off a wildfire. That's what your tongue is. Your tongue is a fire, a world of unrighteousness. The tongue is set among our members, staining the whole body, setting on fire the entire course of life, and set on fire by hell. For every kind of beast and bird, of reptile and sea creature can be tamed and has been tamed by mankind, but no human being can tame the tongue. Did you hear that? No human being can tame the tongue. Why did he say not many of you should rush headfirst into being teachers? Because you got to use a lot of words, and guess what? You can't control them. You can't help yourself. You're like a spark setting off a wildfire. He says it is a restless evil full of deadly poison. I wrote down just a couple of passages from the Proverbs. Proverbs 16, verse 27, a worthless man plots evil and his speech like a scorching fire. Proverbs 26, he says, as charcoal to hot embers and wood to fire, so is a quarrelsome man for kindling strife. Again, you know, the Proverbs kind of speaking to this idea of our words being like the spark that sets off a wildfire. And then from, you know, so we have the importance of the tongue, the illustrations of the tongue, and then the final kind of thing that he hits on to kind of demonstrate again how out of control our words can be is he talks about the inconsistency of the tongue. And what he's saying in this passage in verses 9 through 12 is that it's so easy to, as I grew up here, to talk out of both sides of your mouth, to where you can have good and bad come out of the same mouth, the same tongue, in a millisecond. He says in verse 9, with it we bless our Lord and Father, and with it, we curse people who are made in the likeness of God. So again, he says, you know, we use it to bless our Father, but we also will curse people who are made in the likeness, in the image of God. You know, we've talked about how every person is someone that Christ died for. Everyone is someone that was made in the image of God. And James says, we can praise God on one side, and the other side we can curse someone, anyone else who was made in the image of God. From the same mouth come blessing and cursing. My brothers, these things ought not to be so. Does a spring pour forth from the same opening both fresh and salt water? Can a fig tree, my brothers, bear olives, or a grapevine produce figs? Neither can a salt pond yield fresh water. So again, James is using this to say, it's so easy with our words to appear at one moment holy and another moment to be tearing down those that are around us, like the song Angry Words. Is his love going to win out, or are we going to destroy friendships and relationships with our words? Are we going to do that? You know, so now with those kind of three things out there, let's take a step back and think about the whole again, okay? We may think that we have some sense of the damage that we can do with our words, or we have some sense of what the power of our words are. But do we truly comprehend how bad it can be if we misuse our words? Do we truly comprehend how much power a word used poorly can cause? You know, a show that I used to watch, I don't know if anybody else watched a show called Mythbusters. If you never watched it, I think it was on the Discovery Channel. And it was essentially a science show. But it was a fun show where these two guys, and ultimately a whole bunch of people, they would test out all these like old wives' tales and urban legends, and, you know, whether or not they were actually true. As an example, like how hard is it to find a needle in a haystack? You know, that kind of thing. Carrie Lee, I was thinking this morning, I was thinking one of the ones I remember was, will a cell phone signal actually disrupt a commercial airliner's, you know, signal like they tell us every time we get on a flight? You know, those kinds of things they would test out. Well, they did this show for years. I don't know how long it was on, but there was one thing that they were planning for that never aired. And it never aired because it really went awry. And I wrote down some notes from an article from the San Francisco Gate newspaper, which is where the show was based in San Francisco. And this, just a little summary, it says a crew from the TV show Mythbusters was staging an experiment in the town of Dublin, California. They were trying to fire a cannonball into some large water containers at a bomb disposal range. So get the picture. They're at a bomb disposal range. If you ever watched the show, they were always at a bomb disposal range. And they're firing a cannonball at a large thing of water. Okay, the water is going to absorb the force of the cannonball. I don't know what they were trying to test, but that's what they were doing. So they probably had thought about, well, this cannonball is powerful. That's what we're going to fire it at, water. But I don't think they thought about, well, what happens if we miss the water? What happens if we miss? Well, that's actually what happened. Unfortunately, the Mythbusters crew seriously underestimated the dangerous power of a stray cannonball. According to a newspaper report, the cantaloupe-sized cannonball missed the water, tore through a cinder block wall, skipped off a hillside, flew some 700 yards east. The cannonball bounced in front of a home on a quiet street, ripped through the front door, raced up the stairs, blasted through the bedroom, exited the house, leaving a perfectly round hole in the stucco, crossed a six-lane highway, took out several tiles from the roof of a home on Bellevue Circle, finally slammed into a family's beige Toyota minivan in a driveway on Springdale Drive. The owner of the minivan said, it's shocking that it didn't do more damage than it did. But obviously they had no idea what would happen if we miss the water. And it is fortunate that no one was killed in that. But I think the same thing is true about our words. I don't think we truly comprehend how much damage we can do if we miss. If we say the wrong thing at the wrong time. If we say the wrong thing out with the wrong motivation. I don't think we can understand how much damage we can do. And I, you know, thinking ahead to our, you know, our meeting that we're going to have on the 24th, and I hope that you will make plans to be there, where this is a planning meeting for the future. Okay? For the future. But one thing I know is that a careless criticism, a harsh word, an angry response, we can damage the future of this congregation with our words. We can do that. And it is so easy to do. That's what James is saying here. It's so easy. So we have to take great care that we are looking out for the needs of others instead of ourselves. And thinking about that, Philippians 2. In Philippians 2, and you can turn there if you want to, but Philippians 2, that whole chapter just about is about unity. Paul is encouraging those Christians to be unified. And again, at the beginning of that chapter, he says, you got to look after the needs of others ahead of your own. Consider others as better than yourself. And then he uses Jesus as the ultimate example of one who humbled himself. And then after giving that example, and after telling them, you've got to look after each other, he says this in verse 14. Do all things without grumbling or disputing. Now, how do we grumble or dispute? We do it with our words, right? We do it with our mouths, with our tongues. Now, why did Paul, after going through, you know, saying, look after each other ahead of yourself, you know, put their needs ahead of your own, and using Jesus as the example of humbling yourself, why would he say this? Because he knows that this is the recipe for destroying unity. We can do it with our mouths. And if we're about grumbling and complaining, then we can destroy the unity that we have as a body and our ability to fulfill the mission of the church. He says, do all things without grumbling or disputing, that you may be blameless and innocent, children of God without blemish in the midst of a crooked and twisted generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world. So, the tongue's powerful. James is saying, you don't understand how powerful it is. Now, we're going to close the lesson with this. In the last few verses, go down to verse 13. Before I read this, I want to say, it may seem like, just reading through this, that the topic has changed. Clearly, what James talks about in these few verses it centers around earthly wisdom versus heavenly wisdom. Okay? And you may, again, you probably even have a different header in your Bible for these, you know, 13 through 18 than you do for the first 12 verses. But I don't think the topic has changed. Okay? And I want you to follow with me. So he says this. He says, who is wise and understanding among you? By his good conduct, let him show his works in the meekness of wisdom. Now, key on this verse, verse 14. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast and be false to the truth. Now, how do we boast and how can we be false to the truth? With what? Our words, right? Our tongues, our mouth. So yes, he's talking about earthly wisdom versus heavenly wisdom, but he's talking about how that comes out in what we say, right? He says, if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast and be false to the truth. This is not wisdom that comes from above, but is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be disorder in every vile practice. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits, impartial and sincere. And a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. Go back to verse 14. So this is, again, this is a contrast between earthly wisdom and heavenly wisdom. And in the midst of that, he says, if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your hearts, don't let that come out through your mouth. And what that tells me is that what drives our words is what is written on our hearts. Now, Jesus said the same thing in Matthew 12. In Matthew 12, he says, either make the good tree and its fruit good or make the tree bad and its fruit bad, for the tree is known by its fruit. This is very similar to what he said in the Sermon on the Mount back in Matthew 7. He says, you brood of vipers, how can you speak good when you are evil? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. So Jesus is saying the same thing that James is saying. What comes out of our mouth is what's written on our heart. So this section, if you've got the blank still there in the handout, I have put that in my notes, is if we're going to control our tongue, your heart must be changed. Your heart must be changed. Now, James had earlier said in verse 8 that no human can tame the tongue. And that comes from our inability to change our own heart. We can't transform our own heart. James says if what's coming out of your mouth is boasting and being false, then that shows your heart is led by earthly wisdom. And he says, describes it as, it's not the wisdom that comes from above, but it's earthly, unspiritual, demonic. Well, how do we change that? How do we transform our heart? We can only do that with God. We have to look for the wisdom from above, as James says. The wisdom from above is pure and peaceable, gentle. And so we have to look to God to give us a changed heart, to transform us. Well, how do we know if we have been transformed? Well, James ends this chapter, which again, when he wrote it, there were no chapters. We know that. But from the way we reckon it, in this chapter, he says, the result of a changed heart and the way it comes out of our mouth is this: a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. If we have been transformed, if we have had our heart transformed, we're going to see that manifest in being those who sow peace. Not destruction, not division, not grumbling and complaining, but those who sow peace. So the evaluation for any of us is, am I sowing peace or am I sowing discord? Again, the future of this congregation depends on us being at peace, being unified, and then going out into a lost and dying world and reaching them for the gospel of Jesus Christ. But to do that, we have to be sowers of peace. We have to be sowers of peace with a transformed heart that comes, that shows out of the way we use our mouth. We have a choice. We can either have our hearts not transformed and comes out of our mouth wreaking destruction. Or we can allow God to transform our hearts so that we can sow and reap peace. We can sow and reap peace with our words. This is a powerful message from James. And I hope, even though I feel confident this is a very familiar passage to most of us, I hope that we don't lose the seriousness of the topic. Because oh, how much damage we can do with a careless word, a careless thing that we say. And let us remember that. If you're here this morning and you have never made a commitment to God, then God is the only one who can transform our hearts so that we can be one who sows peace. God is the only one who can save us from sin. He's the only one that can give us the power to fight temptation. The only one that can give us the transformed heart that allows us to transform our speech. We can't do it on our own. And if you've never made that commitment, then I encourage you to think about doing that this morning. If you're here this morning, there's anything else we can do for you. We can pray for you. We can encourage you. We would love to do that. Please come if you need anything as we sing our invitation song.